This is Jay Sekulow. A big day at the Supreme Court. The court hears the executive action on immigration from the president.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
This has been shot down at two courts in Texas, yes, and also in Louisiana, right?
Well, Justice Scalia really tipped his hand as to how he feels about this, because when the case was first appealed to the Supreme Court, Justice Scalia asked the government and the lawyers for the states to brief another issue that wasn't even argued below. And that issue was, did the president violate his oath? Because he took an oath faithfully to uphold the law.
I want to point out that Justice Anthony Kennedy, who of course is a key critical swing vote that people watch in every case, but we're really watching closely today, and he talked about the fact that in his view, what is happening here is that the legislative and executive branches look like they are possibly swapping their roles.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
On Saturday, the Pentagon quietly transferred 9 detainees from Gitmo to Saudi Arabia, bringing the population there down to just 80 detainees.
Under the rules of engagement, that could have been a shootdown.
The press traveling with Defense Secretary Carter overheard him say that he was in Baghdad to discuss the, quote, special capabilities that the U.S. can bring to help the Iraqis begin in earnest to retake Mosul.
We want to do more. We're going to do more because we want to accelerate this and get it over with as fast as we can. We're limited only by our own ingenuity and our ideas.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. Big day at the Supreme Court. Just moments ago, the Supreme Court of the United States heard oral arguments in the case the United States of America versus Texas and 27 other states. This is on the president's executive action issue on immigration. We filed a major brief. In fact, those watching right now on ACLJ.org or viewing us on Facebook and Periscope, I'm holding up for you right now a copy of the brief we actually filed on the case. We'll be joined by one of our senior lawyers in just right after the break on this. But this is a very big case, folks. The idea that the president thought he had the authority to change the law on his own is problematic because he doesn't have that authority. And that's what we stressed in our Supreme Court brief. In fact, the president said he's not a king. We'll play those bites in a little bit. Remember that. But then he went ahead and said he changed the law. But Jordan, this is a big case. Huge ramifications. It's one of a series of cases we've been involved in at the ACLJ on this issue of executive action overreach. And the last one we won at the Supreme Court 9-0 when the president tried to stack the NLRB, saying that the Congress was in recess when they weren't.
Yeah, that's right. And we're getting reports now from the case, from the oral argument. And I know we had an attorney there as well. But Justice Kennedy, a key vote here because of where he and Chief Justice Roberts were on the Arizona on some of the state actions. As is different. This is a federal move by the president, challenged by a state. But he said, quote, "This appears as if the president is setting a policy and Congress is executing it," which, of course, is the reverse. It's supposed to be the Congress sets policy and legislation, and then the president is the one, that executive power. They execute that legislation and policy. So that was a key moment. Again, it doesn't give away exactly where he'll be on the issue, but people were really looking to Justice Kennedy, and he sparred with some of the more liberal justices of the court. And important to point out here, with the 4-4 court, if it were to go 4-4, the lower court decision would stand. And for now, this move by the president would not go into effect. It would be unconstitutional.
Well, we are going to talk about this. Here's the question I want to ask everybody that's listening to this broadcast. Do you think the president took this action, even though he acknowledged he could not change the law, but then he did it? Was this politics? And how do you view the president's reaction? What should the response be if the Supreme Court of the United States says to the president, sorry, you don't get to do it? 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110.
Yep, and you can join us each and every day and live right now on Facebook, Periscope, ACLJ.org, and many other sources. But you can be involved in the conversation, engage on Facebook and Periscope, get your questions or comments in that way. All you got to do is go to Facebook.com/JaySekulow, search for Jay Sekulow on Periscope, or go to ACLJ.org for an interactive, more television-style broadcast that we bring to you each and every day on ACLJ.org. Give us a call right now. Lines are open, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
It is a critical time for our nation, and the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam and the persecution of Christians, to defending life at the U.S. Supreme Court, to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms, we could not do this work without you, without your support. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. Or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support. Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic: How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.
So breaking news, which we are following, and we're trying to get in contact with our office in Jerusalem. But Logan's going to also ask from folks that are listening or watching right now in Jerusalem or in Israel. There's been a bus explosion in the heart of Jerusalem. It has been deemed already by the Israeli government as a terrorist attack. There are multiple casualties. We don't have the finals on any of this yet. It's just coming in. But Logan, if people are in Jerusalem, or and we're trying to get in touch with some of our people
if
too.
If you're in the area, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. If you can't get through, let us know on Facebook or Periscope, and we'll try to get you through on a back channel. So we'll do our best to do that. All right.
All right, we've got, we're going to give you a report right now on exactly what has transpired at the Supreme Court of the United States, and we're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Ben Cisney is the senior counsel for the ACLJ. He was very involved in the drafting of our brief at the Supreme Court. Ben, you were inside. Jordan mentioned earlier the vote of Justice Kennedy. What's your assessment of Justice Kennedy? Obviously, it's an 8-member court right now. Justice Kennedy's vote, very, very important here. What do you sense from him?
Well, of course, it's just speculation, Jay, as you know as well as anybody. But my impression was that he is not inclined to accept the Obama administration's standing argument. So to put it differently, it appeared he was leaning towards the states on the standing argument.
And the standing argument, of course, for those that don't know, is did the states have the right to bring the case in the first place? That was one of the major, it's always the first hurdle in a Supreme Court case. Do the states have the right to bring the case? And Jordan, that was kind of phase one here.
That's always a phase one, is that hurdle. Now, initially, the Supreme Court is supposed to kind of come to a conclusion before they accept a case that generally they believe that there's at least a good argument for standing. But there are cases that are completely decided on that. They don't really get to the full merits of the case, which means, again, if in this case, if they thought that there was no standing and there was a majority of the 4-4, so it was a 5-3 kind of situation, then that would overturn the lower court decision. If there was a split, which is important here, it wouldn't set a national precedent. Obviously, these would
likely come
before the court again. But it would mean that for now and for the rest of the Obama administration, these executive actions would be unconstitutional and they could not be enforced by the executive branch.
Let me play a soundbite. This is a flashback. President Obama, remember when he said, the problem is I'm the president of the United States, I'm not the king, so I don't get to just change the law. And then, of course, he ultimately changed the law. Let's play number 19.
The problem is that I'm the President of the United States. I'm not the Emperor of the United States. My job is to execute laws that are passed.
So, Ben, let me ask you this question. One of the questions that were raised in the briefing that we did and others did was the execution clause of the Constitution. This is the merits of the case. What was your assessment from the court on whether did the issue of the execution clause come up directly in the oral argument?
It did not.
Okay, so which brings a question then. What was the substance, when they got to the substance of the argument, where did it focus?
To be honest, Jay, they spent an awful lot of time on standing. There was some carryover into the substance under the APA, the Administrative Procedures
Act. Okay, so
let's talk about
the APA, okay, because I think it's important for people to understand that. Because ultimately this case is going to come down to, if they're standing, a substantive decision. How do you think it looks right now?
I think it's a 4-4 case, Jay.
Well, 4-4 cases is...
I feel pretty strongly about that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I feel pretty strongly, as much as, and again, you know this better than anybody, yeah. You're always speculating after an oral argument or a hearing, but it seemed to me like a 4-4 court.
Well, a 4-4 court, and thanks, Ben, we appreciate your comments on that. We'll get Than Bennett back in there in a moment. A 4-4 case is a win. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. I'd rather have it 5-4. As a win and have some presidential value, because this is a president overreach here. But again, it's a 4-4 win would be a win nonetheless. 1-800-684-3110. Let's go ahead and take a phone call.
All right, let's go ahead. Let's go to Connie, who's calling from Orlando, Florida. You're on the air.
Hi, Connie.
Hi.
Connie, you there? All right, let's put Connie back on hold, see what's going on, and move on to Mark in El Paso.
Hi, Mark.
That sounds he's testing the system. It reminds me when I was a teenager growing up, and my parents said be home by 10 o'clock, and I came in like at 10:30 or 11, and I walked in like, who cares, you know? So I ended up having to learn the hard way that you don't test the system unnecessarily.
Well, here's what the president. Let me play another one of the flashbacks though, because this is what the president kept saying, that he cannot change the law. I mean, he made this big point over and over again about he can't change the law, and then I want to have the bite ready where he said he changed the law. So listen to number four, and then I'm going to play in a moment the other one.
Ultimately, I'm one man. You know, we live in a democracy. We don't live in a monarchy. I'm not the king. I'm the president. And so I can only implement those laws that are passed through Congress.
So the president says he can only implement the laws passed by Congress, and that's absolutely correct. But there's a problem. He changed the law, and he admitted that he changed the law. He did not hide the fact that he changed the law, and Congress is the one who gets to make the law the president's supposed to execute. Here's number 17 again. The president, during an immigration speech late last year, listened to it very carefully at the end when he says, I changed the law.
You're absolutely right that there have been significant numbers of deportations. That's true. But what you're not paying attention to is the fact that I just took an action to change the law. Now.
Yeah, except the problem is, Jordan, he doesn't have the authority to change the law.
Well, and again, I go back to this was, again, it was, and Ben was right, this was just a small part of the oral argument, which was 90 minutes, because the government, they had different, the Congress had a position and time to make argument. But Justice Kennedy said, you know, refuting what the president just said there, but also agreeing with the bite before where he says he can't change the law, that, quote, the plan appears as if the president is setting a policy and Congress is the one executing it. That's upside down. So again,
that's a big statement.
President to bite 17, which we just played, where he said he took an action to change the law. Justice Kennedy was saying that's what Justice Kennedy is saying. That's upside down to the earlier bites where President Obama said he can't do this. Again, Justice Kennedy would be in agreement that he should not be doing this. But that whole case, Ben also brought up the Administrative Procedures Act, and let's go. These are always important with these kind of cases, especially with a 4-4 court. It's kind of like another part of that standing issue. But the question is, there's something called, so it's the APA, Administrative Procedures Act, and there is a notice and comment requirement for the public.
Right.
And so it's not just Congress, but for the public. This was done without that. So again, this is another example of the president, I think as the caller kind of mentioned, trying to see how far you can go outside the lines of what is normal.
Well, I think he's pushing the limits.
So he's bypassing Congress and then also bypassing the normal procedures that you, when you put in new policy, even if you have the authority to do that, you have a comment period. Remember, those have become important when it comes to the IRS, especially on this tax day. We fought back on some of their new policies because they had to do a comment period. On this, they did not. And so that, again, can be another issue, which is procedural, but very important.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, that in our IRS cases, which we just argued on Friday. So understand, we were at the U.S. Court of Appeals on Friday on oral arguments, making the case there that the IRS abused its discretion, abused its policies. The judge in that case saying, how could you trust the IRS? That was one of the Court of Appeals judges. The next Monday, so that was Friday, Monday, a case where we filed a major brief at the Supreme Court of the United States. Again, I'm holding the brief right here on this immigration executive action overreach. We made similar type arguments that this is just not the authority of the president. We've won before on this, by the way, at the Supreme Court when it came to the kind of the packing of the National Labor Relations Board, where the president wanted to do that. Congress wasn't in recess. We went after it. We won successfully there. We represented Congress. Let's go ahead and take some comments and calls. We are taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Ask yourself this. President acknowledges he cannot change the law, but then he does it. Why does he do it? And is he doing anything different? I'm going to talk about this in the next segment. When he ships 9 Gitmo detainees out of Gitmo over the weekend to Saudi Arabia. We'll talk about that in the next segment of the broadcast. Let's get some comments.
Yeah, we got a lot of comments coming in. This one just pretty much asks a very simple question, which is, why was he allowed to illegally change the law? This is from Cheryl. How did he even have the authority to do that if it was against the rules already?
Let me bring Than Bennett into this, our director of government affairs. So when the president issued this executive action, this executive order, we immediately got engaged in it. In fact, I testified before the House on this. We had a committee of the House of Representatives on the legality of this. And I said, look, I was in favor of comprehensive immigration reform. I think most Americans are. But presidents don't get to do this on their own. I said, impatient presidents don't get to change the law. And then we did multiple hearings on this. So we got involved early, but the president doubled down. He issued the executive action, stuck to it, and then the court challenges took place.
Well, Jay, that had a direct impact on today's oral arguments as well. I mean, you and Ben had the conversation about so much talk about procedures. But listen, one of those procedures was that the state got 15 minutes to argue today. And that would not have happened that Congress got 15 minutes to argue. That would not have happened if you had not gone to the House Judiciary Committee right out of the gates and made this constitutional point that the president cannot do this. As a result of that, the state's got 15 minutes to argue that point today.
And they had 15 minutes. It was about 90 minutes of total oral argument. We filed about a 35-page brief. So, again, front and center on this. All right, we're going to come back from the break. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Let me ask you all to do us a favor. We are in our April matching challenge. It ends at the end of the month. But I'll be blunt, we're behind. We're behind about 15% of where we need to be. So we need to make up some ground here. If you've ever thought about donating to the ACLJ, this would be a great day to do it. It's at aclj.org. You just go right to the website. Any amounts you donate, we're getting a matching gift for. Of course, it's tax deductible. So aclj.org. And then how do you feel about a president and executive action? We'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We come back.
Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. It is a critical time for our nation, and the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam and the persecution of Christians, to defending life at the U.S. Supreme Court, to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms, we could not do this work without you, without your support. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. a $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
So big oral argument today at the Supreme Court of the United States, and that was on this issue of the president's executive action overreach. The American Center for Law and Justice, we filed a major brief in that case. We are taking your calls and comments about this because this was something you all got involved in. There were hundreds of thousands of people signed this brief. We testified before the House Judiciary Committee. I did early on this. We kind of set the stage, as Stan Bennett just said. We kind of set the stage for how this was going to proceed through this congressional hearing. Congress was able to participate in the brief, in the briefing, and in the case. We were able to participate in the briefing. So, major case at the Supreme Court. Does the president have this authority? Our answer is no. It looks like Chief Justice Roberts was not sympathetic to this idea that the states couldn't even bring the suit. I want you to understand this. The Obama administration started the argument by saying the states have no voice in this. They should not even be able to file suit. And by the way, it was the state of Texas, 27 other states. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. How do you feel about the president doing this and your reaction to it? 800-684-3110. We've got a lot of calls and comments coming in.
Yep, let's go ahead and take a phone. Let's go to Britt, who's calling from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hi, Britt.
On line one. Britt, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Jay.
Yes.
Hi, guys. You know, the thing that I'm not hearing in all this is, it seems like, and tell me if I'm wrong here, please, that the law is very clear. And yet, by all accounts, it's going to be a split court with the conservatives against the liberals. And I just wanted you to address what that says about the liberal agenda and what damage is already done, maybe irreparable already because of all these.
Well, let me tell you what it tells you. Elections have consequences because judges are selected, and justices to the Supreme Court are selected by presidents. So President Obama was the president of the United States, is the president of the United States. He selected a number of judges, and guess what happens? Including justices of the Supreme Court. So you have this split. So whether it's Republicans or Democrats, you got to find out who is the judicial, whoever's making the selection, whoever the president is in this next round. We know there'll be one vacancy, and that is with the death of Justice Scalia. So you've got a very divided court, and you've got a constitution that hangs in the balance. And you've got this, it's affected a generation, maybe two. So the next justice appointed to the Supreme Court, and I suspect the next president probably appoints two or three, will control the Supreme Court, certainly for the rest of my legal career. I started arguing cases at the Supreme Court the year after Antonin Scalia was sworn in, 1987. He was sworn in 86. So for over 25 years, almost 30 years, I appeared before Justice Scalia. Having said that, and I think this is the reality that we have to deal with, you've got a very divided court, and a very divided court means it's going to be a close case. Now, a 4-4 tie is a win. Not the win that you want, but a win is a win because it's not a precedential value. But that's one of the reasons why we're focusing so aggressively on this. Let's go ahead and take another caller comment, Logan.
Sure, let's go ahead. Let's go to Mark, who's calling from Fort Worth, Texas.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Jay.
Yes, sir.
It's a clear, you know, it's a Supreme Court executive overreach. You know, it's clear that that's going on and everything. It's very troubling that there's four Supreme Court judges at least that are, you know.
I just said this, so Mark, look, elections have consequences. So when people are voting, understand the Supreme Court hangs in the balance. It doesn't get as much attention as it should, but that's a fact. So when we're complaining about it's 4-4, well, guess what? Elections have consequences.
Yeah, and we should talk elections a little bit because a big primary tomorrow in New York, and that has 95 delegates at stake for the Republicans, and then for the Democrats, 247 delegates at stake. This would be obviously Hillary Clinton needs a big win on the Democrat side to kind of stop. Bernie Sanders has basically been winning everything, but now getting to the big states. For Republicans, right now the polls show Donald Trump with a big lead, actually John Kasich in second. The way it works there is if these leads hold through tomorrow, Donald Trump could walk away with all 95 delegates. It's not automatic.
That would be a big win.
Winner take all. That's right. And then he'd be about 300 or so delegates short of the 1237
Cruz
number.
Won this weekend.
Yeah, that's right. There were a couple of these delegate battles in Missouri and again in Colorado. So you've got those state battles happening.
Right.
But Donald Trump still then would have additional more than a dozen states to put those numbers together. One of the big ones, obviously, California.
I think it may all come down to California. Taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Logan.
Comment came in from Delroy Cunningham on Facebook. Said, what did Ronald Reagan and President Bush and the other presidents before President Obama do? Did they not do the same thing?
They did executive actions, but when there were executive actions, there was an underlying piece of legislation that they were putting into play. That's very different than changing the law. And I made this statement. In fact, the fact that presidents did it, if they violated the Constitution, that doesn't make it right because, you know, unconstitutional acts don't get better with time. And Than, we pointed that out at the hearing. Actually, I could play with let me play the segment. This was from the House hearing, the Judiciary Committee hearing, when I made that statement, and then I'll get Than's comment.
This reliance that we've seen on some that President Reagan and President Bush and even President Eisenhower made or issued executive action or executive orders, which in some cases may be clearly distinguishable because they didn't set forth a new class, but even if they were not distinguishable, past constitutional acts do not get better with time. They are still just that, unconstitutional actions.
So past unconstitutional actions don't get better with age, and that's kind of, and with Than, we ran that theme pretty aggressively.
Oh, absolutely. And there is one that you mentioned this that is distinguishable in some way. There was a new law passed in 1986 that both of those presidents were trying to implement. And here's the biggest distinction. Congress, by and large, didn't challenge those regulations because they thought it was consistent with the 1986 Act. In this case, Jay, Congress has spoken out with an overwhelming voice that what the president did was take their lawmaking authority that was granted to them under Article 1. You laid that case out in the Judiciary Committee, and that is the argument that the court asked for additional briefing on and has carried all the way to the Supreme Court now.
This was an issue, by the way, we raised, as Than just pointed out the House Judiciary Committee. It was not part of the cases initially. We raised it. I raised it in my testimony and in my appearance before the House Judiciary Committee. And what happened there was Justice Scalia, when obviously no longer hearing the case because he passed away, and his vote would not count even if he said this is how he would vote. It's who's on the court when the decision's issued. But he asked for briefing on this very point, and that was, can the president change the law like this? And the fact of the matter is presidents can. And if some other president did it and it was unconstitutional, well, it doesn't make it better that it's, you know, been an unconstitutional act for 20 years. So we were very aggressive on that point. Logan, you got a comment, I think.
I did. This came in from Rick Rose, who said, if the Supreme Court rules in Obama's favor, then why do we even need a Congress or a Supreme Court if a president can do anything they want?
This is, Rick has made a great point, and that is the main point of this. The whole idea that a president can simply, on his own, change the law should run chills down everybody's spine. I mean, the idea that the president of the United States could on his own change the law completely undercuts the separation of powers and merges Article 2 with Article 1 and creates a situation where then you don't need Article 3, which are the courts. Article 1, of course, dealing with the executive. Article 2 with the Congress. I mean, the whole idea here would be turned upside down. And Jordan, this is one of the things we fought on. We got to go very quickly. We're near a break here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is why the courts are in place, is to kind of stop these kind of actions, because this would set an unprecedented level of precedent. Would it mean that presidents can do whatever they want? No, but it would expand the bounds of how far a president can act contrary to congressional law. So what the laws are on the books, it would expand those bounds.
All right, coming up after the break, we're going to talk about how this impacts the Supreme Court, impacts the presidency, how we think that plays out. Also, we're going to get an update on the situation in Jerusalem. Let me do remind everybody, we are in a matching challenge campaign. You'll be getting an email from me today on this executive action, overreach, and immigration. Your support of the ACLJ allows us not only to broadcast, but allows us to bring cases to the Supreme Court of the United States. So go to ACLJ.org or respond to that email, and your support will be doubled. Any amount you donate, we're getting a matching gift for it at ACLJ.org. And, of course, it's tax deductible. But, again, ACLJ.org. And, Logan, a lot of ways to hear the program.
That's right. You can join us many different ways. Facebook, Periscope, or ACLJ.org, or the ACLJ app. Or if you can't stay around for the second half hour, subscribe to the Jay Sekulow Live podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and coming soon to Google Play.
It is a critical time for our nation, and the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255 or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. So the Supreme Court of the United States heard oral arguments today in a case involving the president's executive action overreach on the issue of immigration. We filed a major brief in that case. In fact, I'm holding it up again here for our audience watching online or maybe watching on Facebook or Periscope. But for those listening on radio, you can hear the 40 pages. Kind of. There it is. That's the brief that we filed on this. The president doesn't have the authority to change the law. We've talked about that. We believe that. We testified on Capitol Hill on that fact. But the reality is it's before the Supreme Court of the United States. And while I'm optimistic, it could well be a 4-4 tie and probably will be, which is a win. Not the precedent you'd like because we don't have a full membership in the court. But it would stop the president's executive action overreach, at least for this presidential cycle. Now, the next president could reinstitute it. We'd be back challenging again. But we were there challenging the issue. But here's the question I want to ask you as we approach this segment of the broadcast, and that is, you understand that a lot of people complaining, well, there's 4-4 ties on the court and these liberal judges, what do? Elections have consequences. So I want to know two things from you. Number one, where are you leaning in this election right now? And number two, how do you view the importance of the Supreme Court for cases like this? So understand, a president's selection affects generations, multi-generations, especially with precedent. So again, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. And Jordan, this is a bit of the overlooked aspect of this election cycle, is this president is probably determining the majority of the Supreme Court for the rest of my life, maybe the rest of y'all's life. I mean, maybe the next two generations here.
Yeah, I mean, it could be for a very long time if you're appointing. The current appointment that's hanging out there would be an older appointment to the court. But still, I mean, it could serve 20 plus to almost 30 years, possibly. And so think about if the next president of the United States, they're nominating people who, if they have a healthy life, are there for, 25 to 30 years, on average, at least. And so, again, that doesn't just affect your generation, but my generation as well. And so this election, huge consequences when it comes to cases like this, because as we know, this one hangs in the balance. I mean, I don't expect this to be 5-3 in favor of Texas. If Texas were to hold on, it'd be the 4-4 split. Just because of the way the court is set up, which means you are literally just one vote away from a big change, but you're two justices away from what could be a huge shift where a court that's been fairly middle would go very left or pretty right.
You know, it's interesting because some people are, I noticed on Facebook, Logan, I'm sure you're seeing these comments, are saying, hey, Jay, he's already changed the law, so what can you do about it now? Well, the fact of the matter is, and this is important to understand, the fact of the matter is, when he's made these changes, we have challenged him, and Fan, we've challenged him successfully. We've stopped some of this.
Absolutely. In multiple cases, and I would just double down on that. I mean, first of all, this issue isn't over. We can still win on the issue of can he write immigration law, but we've got to think beyond that as well. I mean, the impact, and Jordan alluded to this, it's well beyond immigration policy. You said that the Obama administration opened their argument saying that states don't even have a right to challenge it, but implicit in their argument, Jay, is that Congress does not have a role in writing these laws.
Right.
If Congress doesn't have a role in writing these laws, they don't have to have a role in writing the laws on any number of issues as well. So the ramifications of this are going to expand well beyond immigration if it goes the wrong way.
All right. We have got an update also. Thanks, Dan. We've got an update right now that Logan's going to break. This is breaking news on the situation in Jerusalem with the bus.
All right. The number of injured has been raised now to 15, but the Jerusalem Post is reporting a photo of it, I believe, happening right now on our Facebook and Periscope feeds and our ACLJ.org feed. The Jerusalem Post has reported that the exploded bus was empty and the injuries were sustained by people on another bus.
Right behind it, you can see it. There was a couple of shots where I actually saw it. There was a second bus.
It looked like there was two buses. Yeah. So it was a bus that was exploded. It was empty, but in that, probably because they knew security would be less than an empty bus, unlike there would be before. So, we'll keep you updated as things progress, but a lot of people are chiming in with their comments and their feedback to this situation. We'll be taking more of those calls and questions and comments on Facebook, Periscope, and of course, you can give us a call. 1-800-684-3110.
And folks, let me encourage you again. We are a little bit behind in our matching challenge, about 15% behind, so we really could use your help. If you support the ACLJ or you want it, you'll be getting an email from me. If you don't get our emails, you should. Go to ACLJ.org, ACLJ.org, and make an online gift. Any amount you donate, we're getting a matching gift for. So again, ACLJ.org. You donate $20, we get $40, and it's matched, and it's tax-deductible. Again, ACLJ.org. Encourage you to do that. We'll take your calls. We come back from the break at 800-684-3110.
It is a critical time for our nation. and the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam and the persecution of Christians, to defending life at the U.S. Supreme Court, to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms, we could not do this work without you, without your support. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. Or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support. Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic: How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.
Broadcast, everyone, 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. If you're just joining us, huge case at the Supreme Court, quoting Donald Trump, but it is a huge case, actually, at the Supreme Court of the United States. And that case involves the executive action overreach, in our view, that President Obama engaged in on the issue of immigration reform when he changed the law, which he doesn't have the authority to do. We filed a major brief in that case. We are working that issue aggressively. We testified before the Judiciary Committee. We then filed briefs at the court, District Court, Court of Appeals, and at the Supreme Court of the United States. So, Than, it's very fair to say that we kind of led the charge on this, moving this thing forward. I mean, the state of Texas, obviously, the states were the ones who had legal standing to bring the suit. We filed briefs in their behalf, but we started this off in Congress.
Yeah, Jay, and that engagement is the reason that the Congress had 15 minutes today to argue their case. I've been reading the headlines today, and I would just caution our listeners, a lot of these headlines are talking about how this case is about immigration reform. And it is in a very narrow sense, but as we talked about in the break here, it's really primarily about separation of powers.
Yep.
Those members of Congress, Jay, that we worked with, they don't all agree on immigration reform. In fact, some of them even lean a little bit towards the president's position on this. But what they all agree on and what we argued for them is that they, the Congress, have the authority to write the laws. And that's the primary question that the court heard today.
All right, let's go ahead and go right back to the phones at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Logan? You're Logan, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless you want Than to take it, Than.
No, go ahead.
Linda's calling in Fairview, Texas. I only get a few seconds to speak. You can't give it to Than.
Yeah, hey.
Linda's calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Linda.
Hello. Bless
hey.
You all, and
thanks.
Thank you for taking
sure.
my call. I just wonder, if Obama doesn't have the authority to change these laws, then why can't we just not obey them?
Well, because we're a country of rules and regulations and procedures, and the way you do that is you challenge it in the courts. And let me say from the outset here, very important, I want Jordan's comment on this as well. We challenged this at the district court level, our side won. We challenged it at the Court of Appeals, and our side won. So the president has not been able to prevail in this through two levels of review. Now it's at the Supreme Court. But the fact is, the way you challenge it, Linda, is to bring the action in court. You don't just, you know, we don't just talk about it on this broadcast. We take action. We did just that. And now, of course, Jordan, it's at the Supreme Court of the United States. And it, as Linda said, it's a huge issue. And people don't understand why, if it's unconstitutional, yeah. someone has to make the court's role is to determine the constitutionality yeah. of presidential action.
Because even with President Obama's comments, you know, the one saying he's not the king and can't change the law, and the other saying he did change the law to two different audiences, the court, again, they're going to look at what actually happened here, not just the rhetoric. And what the Obama administration was arguing today, one of their positions was that this was just guidance issued, that it wasn't a legal change, that it was not a major policy change, that it was just guidance issued to the Department of Homeland Security, which oversees Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the other agencies like that. So they will try to distract from the rhetoric and say, this is really just a guidance, it's discretion, it's a prosecutorial discretion issue like they have done in the past. And that's, so that's, again, trying to just inform everybody who's listening what their argument is. They are not arguing at the court today that they can change the law without Congress, even though the president may have used language like that, did use language like that. Yep. In fact, what their argument is that this is guidance. But if this kind of, if this is accepted as guidance, then the reach of presidential power, not just in immigration, but on so many domestic
would
issues,
be unreal.
We're not talking just foreign policy now, we're talking domestic issues, would be unprecedented. We
wouldn't
have ever seen anything like it.
It'd be unlimited in scope. I mean, if a president can just change the law because he's impatient, that presents a serious problem, and that's exactly what we've got here. Let's go right back to the phones, a lot of callers.
All right, here's a comment, actually, before we take a phone call. It said, how does a 4-4 vote make it a win?
So a 4-4 vote, it's a good, great question, a 4-4 vote is a tie. A tie is an affirmance of the lower court. We were successful in both the district court and at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, so it would be a win. In other words, the president's executive action would not go into effect. Having said that, however, I think it's very important to point this out, having said that, that does not set a precedent because it's a tie, but it would be a win. So I would take that right now rather than risk it. I would take that. That's what happens when you have eight justices on the court. I've had that situation where I've had eight justices on the court. Sometimes they have you re-argue the case. That could happen here. I actually argue.
I was about to ask you that question. Is that, could this be so divided and people are so on the line that they say, you know what, we want to hold this over until there's the next justice? If that happened, then so long as that would mean that probably under the rest of the Obama administration, and
effect.
if the Senate Republicans don't cave, even if there was a new appointment, that would be post Obama.
That's correct. And what's interesting there is I've had a case where it was an abortion protest case where we argued it to eight members of the court, and they set it aside at the end for re-argument at the end of the term. I had to argue it the next term. Actually, you know who my co-counsel was in that one? You may remember this, Logan and Jordan, John Roberts. He was representing the United States. They were on the side of the abortion protesters. And John Roberts and I re-argued the case the next October. Now, there's something else that can happen. I mean, you saw what happened in that Little Sisters of the Poor case where they basically proposed a settlement of the situation. I don't see that happening here, but this 8-8 justices thing has raised a lot of issues. Let's go ahead and grab another call or comment.
All right. Yeah, there is a – let's go ahead and take a call. We got a lot of calls. Let's go to Michael, who's calling from California.
Hey, Michael.
How you doing?
Yes, sir.
We've got a president that is acting the same as the king.
Yep.
Which led to the Declaration of Independence.
Correct.
You can take the Declaration of Independence, substitute the king's name by President Obama. He, the president, and his ilk are operating in the same manner.
Well, look, I mean, you're right that one of the things that concerned the founders of our country was that we were operating under a monarchy with no representation. And what happens in a situation like this, and Thane runs our government affairs department, could you imagine if the president can do this, and if the Supreme Court would say, yes, the president had the authority to do this, then it almost makes Congress an advisory agency, which would be horrendous because that's not what the Constitution says.
I think it does make them an advisory agency, and more importantly, I think that's what members of Congress are saying. If you are going to take away authority that is clearly provided to us under the Constitution, you know, what role do we have to exist? And just quickly, to go back to Jordan's point about guidance, part of the reason that Congress had to speak up and talk is because it is President Obama's bureaucracy that is enforcing this. So just as everyday citizens, we're not the ones that can ignore it. It is his bureaucrats that are enforcing this guidance.
You're absolutely correct. Another call or comment, Logan?
Let's just take one more call as we head into the next break. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Ohio.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Jay. I want to say I'm a Trump supporter when you asked that question.
All right.
But here's what I got to say. Why is the president trying to change the Constitution, and why is it so bad for immigrants to come in the right way, illegally way, instead of the way
like my grandfather,
like
my grandfather did. My grandfather came through Ellis Island and waited, 15 years to get citizenship, but he came here legally. He followed the rules and the procedures, and he did that. And why is the president doing this? Look, do we have the bite where impatient presidents don't get their own way? Because that's what I said to the United States House of Representatives, that the impatient presidents don't get their own way. And that this idea, Jordan, that a president just makes the change that he wants. Let me play the bite, then we'll get Jordan's comment.
Yeah. Even with sympathy to the cause of immigration reform, impatient presidents may not violate the Constitution if they don't get their way.
I actually think that became the whole theme of this entire case, yeah. And we set that theme out early on at the Judiciary Committee. Go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah, because here's the issue. We can all have different opinions on what needs to be done with the people that right. would be qualifying under this proposal by the president. If this had worked through Congress in a bipartisan way, it could be totally legal. You know, if this was a congressional law then signed by the president, the parents of Americans and all of that, it would. You know, it'd just be a policy change, normal. And there's a lot of debate about what is right and wrong on you. And you mentioned that in your testimony. It's not this is not about that. And that's why, as Dan pointed out, we've had crossover from members of Congress on our brief who don't even agree on the immigration issue. I think we all know as Americans we have a problem with people who have been here for a number of years, and we have to deal with that. But as most of us on the right believe, that we don't deal with that problem until we stop the new incoming folks, which means securing our borders more properly. And then you say, okay, we've secured our borders. We've got 10 million to 20 million people here undocumented. We've got to figure out figure out a process, whether it's a yep. pathway to permanent residency or deportation, whatever. That's kind of part two. Part one should be securing the border.
Absolutely.
But this is about expansion of presidential power. You can ignore you don't have to talk immigration really on this
issue.
It
could be actually on any single topic. You cannot have a president changing the rules, period. There you go. Let's grab a comment before the break
This came in again from Rick Ross, who said, if the Supreme Court rules in Obama's favor, will he then be able to issue executive orders for other things like to close Guantanamo Bay without having to go?
Well, look, he's trying to close Guantanamo Bay now by just moving the people out. He sends nine Gitmo detainees to Saudi Arabia, by the way, which is where most of the 9/11 attackers came from. And there's a whole dispute going on with Saudi Arabia. We haven't even touched on that today. I may get to that later in the week. I mean, there's a whole thing going on with Saudi Arabia right now, down to, I think, a little less than 80 or maybe 80 detainees left. And so it's the president. Look, he's trying to do everything he can for his legacy with executive action. No doubt about it. All right, we're going to do a rapid fire round. That means we're going to take your calls. We're going to do them quick. The number is 1-800-684-3110. Again, we've got a matching challenge campaign. Any amount you donate, just go over to ACLJ.org. We're getting a matching gift for it. We're about 15% behind last year, so we really need your help. ACLJ.org. And Logan, we're going to do that rapid fire round so people can engage right now in multiple ways.
That's right. Facebook and Periscope, great. But if you want to make sure your comment gets on the air, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. As of now, one line is open. That may clear up during the commercial break. So again, 1-800-684-3110. 3110.
Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic: How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. It is a critical time for our nation, and the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam and the persecution of Christians, to defending life at the U.S. Supreme Court, to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms, we could not do this work without you, without your support. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50.
a $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
Take your questions in a rapid fire round. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Taking in on political questions, Supreme Court questions. We're monitoring the situation, obviously, with regard to Jerusalem. More on that, I'm sure, later. We'll be tweeting on that and getting that out. Logan, so people want to stay in contact with us. We need to say this at the outset here, because the fact is we will keep everybody updated on these international developments. We've got an office in Jerusalem. So how is the best way for people to connect with us?
Right. Connect with us many different ways, aclj.org, but obviously Facebook and Periscope. And Facebook and Twitter actually are great ways to interact throughout the day. Facebook and Periscope, great ways to watch the show when it's live. But you can interact, find out breaking news. Twitter's a great source, at ACLJ or at Jay Sekulo, at Jordan Sekulo. You can find out all that information there. Obviously, ACLJ. Facebook search for American Center for Law and Justice. If you type in ACLJ, it may show up, but make sure it's the one that has, you know, a million, 2 million likes on it. So I believe I'll find out the direct domain to the Facebook. I believe it's official ACLJ or something like that.
Yeah, and then I've got one as well, and so does Jordan. So Jay Sekulo and then Jordan Sekulo as well. And then, of course, as Logan said, the American Center for Law and Justice. So connect with us on social media. It's a good way to stay up to date with us during the day as developments. And we send out releases and tweets in the evening when news warrants it. So we'll stay
on top of that. It's facebook.com/theACLJ, T-H-E-A-C-L-J. Or just search American Center for Law and Justice.
It comes up, and it's about 2.5 million people
on it. It'll be your first source.
All right, let's go right back to the – this is a rapid-fire round, so let's do this.
All right, Dwayne calling in Dallas, Texas.
Hey, Dwayne, quickly, please.
Yeah, I'm a Trump's – I mean, a Cruz supporter.
All right.
I'm leaning towards a man that is proven constitutionalist. The one we got now knows the Constitution, taught the Constitution, and look where it's got us. So we need the one that's going to support
the Constitution. Yeah, because he's got a view of the Constitution that he's implementing, and that is the Constitution is a living, breathing document, and you get to do with it whatever you want. And the fact of the matter is, Dwayne, we're seeing, and I'll let Jordan and Than comment very quickly on this, that is the problem, how they view the Constitution. We need to know that in a president. How do they view the Constitution? Not just from justices. How does the president view the Constitution?
Yes, and I would say, I mean, if you're going looking at someone like Hillary Clinton, I'd expect very similar Supreme Court nominees that from President Obama, the same kind of world, the same. So people to the left with proven left record. She's been endorsed by Planned Parenthood, so on that issue, you know where she'd be. So again, to the left. Now the Republican side's a little different. I think with Ted Cruz, you know, conservative justice, it'd be pretty clear he's well-versed in that world. Donald Trump has named some very conservative names, some good friends of ours, as potential Supreme Court nominees. Says he would actually come out with a list of who's on that. He, though, would be, again, and he knows this, he's acknowledged it, be a little bit more of a question mark because it's not something he's as familiar with, which is, you know, making those kind of appointments and decisions. So for him, if he ultimately is the nominee, I think for conservatives it will be important to actually see that list of potential names.
All right, we've got questions and comments coming in.
Let's take calls. David, Patriot, Indiana, line 5.
Patriot, Indiana, there you go. Hey, David.
Hey, Jay. I was wondering if the Constitution is that precarious and consequence, as you say, elections have consequences. Yep. Well, what happens if we end up with somebody like Hillary in there who puts two or three super liberal judges on there?
You're going to have a super liberal Supreme Court.
They eliminate the Constitution completely.
Well, you know, what happens is you have a Supreme Court that tilts not to the left a little bit, but the left a lot, and they're going to have their progressive view of the Constitution, which is going to be against what the founders had in mind. It's going to give unprecedented authority to the president. There's going to be no check and balance. The Establishment Clause and the Religious Freedom Clauses will be turned upside down. So will the Free Speech Clause. And the fact of the matter is, it'll affect not just this generation, my generation, or Logan and Jordan or Than's generation, but their children and maybe their grandchildren. So this is the reality of what we've got. I mean, this is why elections matter. And the fact is, now, Than, it hasn't gotten a lot, really quickly here, it hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but it should be. Because it's a big deal who the Supreme Court picks are going to be.
The checks and balances that we have, though, Jay, defer to the American voter. So if the American voter chooses a particular way, it's going to have ramifications. And the only thing I would also add to that caller, also the election for Senate, because those nominations then have to clear the Senate, as we're seeing now with Merrick Garland.
All right, let's go ahead and take another comment or call. We're going to do this up here.
Brad in Michigan on line 6.
Hey, Brad.
Hey, Jay, how are you?
Good. Good, sir.
Good. Just a question. If the Obama administration wins this case, let's say 5-3, does that set a precedent? And then what happens if we get, let's say, Trump in office who decides he wants to live as a dictator or more as a king?
Yeah, well, let me address the first one. Number one, if President Obama wins this, his order goes into effect. It doesn't have precedential value, but his order goes into effect. Number two, depending on the scope of the order, will determine, and Jordan, really quickly here, will determine, again, but it may not be will not be precedent unless it was, you know, lopsided 4-3 or 5-3. But the fact of the matter is that will have a big impact on presidential authority.
Absolutely. I mean, this would expand presidential power. And you know what? Sometimes under a Republican or a conservative, you may like it. And then sometimes under a Democrat, you may not. But it honestly, for those of us who believe in the Constitution, the separation of powers, that should not matter. It shouldn't be political. It should be what's right and what's wrong. And I think that presidential power has been expanded quite enough over the last few decades since FDR. It's been reined in as well. And I think we're at a safe spot right now.
But that could change in a moment.
In a moment, we don't want to go further.
Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and take the last two calls here, Lloyd.
Right, two Riches to ratchet up. So listen for you for what city and state you're calling from. All right, Rich in Washington first. Rich on line 3. Rich, New Orleans. We'll get to you next.
Hey, Rich.
Yes. Real quick. To me, it's obvious this thing really ought to be 8-0. But what would be the reasoning? How would the four liberal judges justify saying that it's okay for the president to change the law?
They would say, well, here's what they would do, Rich. They would say he's not changing the law. They're saying he's just exercising prosecutorial discretion. This was pretty much the government's argument, that presidents can set orders and priorities. The Department of Justice is an executive branch agency, and they are just setting priorities. And, Than, that's kind of what they were saying.
The left has always viewed a long arm of the executive as a good thing, Jay. So this is not a surprise. This is a view that they've long held, and now they're making that case before the court.
All right, last call.
Rich in New Orleans.
Hey, Rich.
Hey, how are you?
Good, sir.
I guess, Jay, I need some education. I'm not satisfied with the points you made with the previous caller who said, why would we have to obey a law that is technically moot? Because
it's not technically
the
moot.
Document that we use to give
power... No. Because, Rich, it's not technically moot. So a president makes an executive action. Then we believe that it's an unconstitutional executive action. But we're not a government of men. We're a government of laws. By the people. So the people adopted a constitution of the United States, which says when an action takes place and there's a challenge, you go through the judiciary. So you challenge an unconstitutional act through the rule of law, through the courts. That's how it's done. What part do you not like of that? I mean, that's because that is, or else everybody would be determining what's constitutional or not on their own, and that's not good either.
No, I guess the part that I don't like about it is that means the laws only apply to me. Because I gave government...
The Supreme Court will determine, in this case hopefully, that the president's action was a violation of the Constitution and therefore not valid. And it impacts everybody that was involved in the process. And that is going to do it for the broadcast today. We thank everybody for calling in. Again, we'll keep monitoring the situation in Israel during the course of the day, right, Logan? And people
Absolutely.
Can get in information again. Tell them how.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter at JSecHillo, at JordanSecHillo, probably for a lot of breaking news items. Both great places to do it. And find us on Facebook. Subscribe to the Jay Sekulow Live podcast. Apple TV app, ACLJ. Find it there. Also the iOS app.
And don't forget, we're in a matching challenge, folks. We're behind about 15%. Go to ACLJ.org. Make a donation now. Any amount you donate, we're getting a matching gift for ACLJ.org.
It is a critical time for our nation, and the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255 or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.